The following is a lecture by Rabbi David Kaplan. Rabbi Kaplan is originally from Chicago. He attended Northeastern University and received his rabbinical ordination in Jerusalem. He has lectured widely in Israel and America and is currently a senior lecturer at the main campus in Jerusalem.
Sources. These are not necessarily the only sources in the Torah report. I've chosen some of the sources, some of the verses that you'll find in Tanakh that discuss the subject, but these are by no means the only sources. Speech is one of the things that is easiest. It is easiest to do. People like to talk. People enjoy talking, and it's easy to talk. Commentaries even say that the fact that we have two layers covering the tongue is a layer of teeth. And there's lips to cover the tongue as a reminder to us that it should be doubly difficult for us to open our mouth before we speak. It's something that fused properly can be, it can bring a person to Olam Haba. If misused, something that's got tremendous potency. The first verse you see quoted over here is a verse from Proverbs that says, life and death, the ability, if a person misuses his mouth, let's say you testify against somebody, right? Court sentences him to death, right? So it's your mouth that has brought death to this person, right? If you test it for him, right, you get him to save his life. The power of life and death, right? If you are the one that can get somebody in trouble through informing on him. The power of life and death is contained in the tongue. The tongue is an extremely potent weapon. The Gemara talks about in places the responsibility that we have to control our speech and to be kind coming out of our mouth. Verse also in Proverbs that test silver, the quality of silver. It says, Matzrei v'kesef, there's a certain testing. You put silver into a machine, it tests the quality of the kor lezahav, the same thing for gold. You could put gold into some type of furnace, and it refines it and tests the quality of the gold. V'ish l'fi mahalala, to his praise. When you want to check the quality. So the verse says, and a man according to his praise. You could check him through his praise. What does that mean, to test a man according to his praise? So there are two meanings over here. The plain meaning is that if I want to find out much about him, how do I go about finding out about him? I find out what it is that people are saying about him. How are people praising him? What do people say positive about this individual? What it is about the individual, let's say I'm looking for a partner in business, so if I hear that he's praised for his honesty and his integrity, then this is somebody who chances are I'll take as a partner. If I hear that people speak about what a shyster he is, then I'm not going to take him as a partner in my business. Now, that's the first meaning. The first meaning is a man according to his way, and the tool is praised, tells you something about the individual. Right? But there's another explanation. A man according to his praise means you want to find out what somebody is all about. Listen to what it is that he praises. A man according to his praise, what comes out of this individual's mouth? What is he enthusiastic about? That's a way of telling about the individual type person. Somebody's enthusiastic about spirituality. That's his, chances are, not necessarily, obviously, a person could talk spirituality, but assuming that there's a certain sincerity that's detected, then we see that this is what the person is all about. There's another, the Gemara says, if you want to check out the quality of an individual, very fascinating Gemara. The Gemara says, a man is recognizable in three ways. Bikoso, bikiso, uvikaso. Right? A man is recognized in three ways. Koso means in his cups, when he's drinking. Kiso means his pocket. Kaso means his anger. That means you want to tell, what is somebody, everybody, we always put on a show externally to try to show ourselves as a certain way. You want to see what a person is really all about. So the Gemara says, look at him when he's drunk. See this person, see an individual when he's drunk. You know that that's the idea of drinking on Purim. Everybody's, you know that we have a tradition. This is the one holiday. Everybody knows this holiday. Everybody becomes extremely observant on the holiday of Purim. On Purim, there's a mitzvah. Right? Everybody knows this mitzvah. Everybody knows there's a mitzvah on Purim to quote unquote get drunk. Right? Now, it doesn't quite say to get drunk because the entire Purim miracle was brought about through drinking. Esther got Ahasuerus and Haman She brought them together to a festive wine, and that's what the Jewish people did. Purim, because the salvation of the Jewish people was physical salvation. Therefore, we celebrate through wine. What drink? Well, a little bit. For a long time, I had an annual meeting with my brother under my mother's table. Every Purim, we would meet under it. Sometime during the meal, we would meet under the table, right? And you see people, even the most religious, in Yerushalayim on Purim, you'll see people in the salt. You're in a cab with a bottle. The whole Yerushalayim is one big bottle, right? And everybody's drinking. What's the idea? The idea is that, actually I heard this from Rabbi Gottlieb, when you're in a situation where you're working on spiritual growth, and you're especially when you're very interested to step back and see how much of what I'm studying, how much of these ideals have actually been internalized. What of all these ideals, these lofty goals and ideals that I'm studying about, how much of this have I actually internalized? When do you know what you've internalized? So if you get drunk and you kick back a little bit, and then you watch, you monitor your behavior. Now, if you get drunk and then you grab the nearest lampshade and jump on the table, right, and do clever things, right? Obviously, that's where you are. If you get drunk and you speak and all sorts of dirt and smut comes out of your mouth, so obviously that is not much has been internalized. But when you see, I've seen a big rabbi get drunk, all the time, big rabbis, they get drunk, and in their state of a drunken stupor, they start speaking Torah and coming up with all sorts of innovative ideas in Torah, right? Or making all sorts of Torah mathematical calculations, right? Then that means that there's something about the ideals that they're putting that's been internalized. The way, very often, you see what's truly inside a person, the Gemara says, Nichnas Yayin, when the wine goes in, the secret comes out. Right? Nichnas Yayin Yatsasov. When the wine goes in, the secret comes out. You know the numerical value of Yayin is 70. The numerical value of secret in Hebrew, Sod, is 70, right? The wine goes in and it pushes out the secret. That means I'm sure you've seen people who've been drunk and then they just start blabbing all sorts of personal things, personal secrets, which afterwards they find out they were speaking about, they'd be ashamed, right? When a person gets drunk, he loosens up part of himself that allows his subconscious to come out. Then we see what he's really made up of. If you want to tell what somebody is made up of, the Gemara says, check out what his behavior is like when he's drunk, right? Because then he can't fake you out when he's drunk. Out his behavior. And drunk does not necessarily mean wine, by the way. Drunk does not. A person could be inebriated with activity. You want a great testing ground. He's drunk with the competition. When he's drunk with the activity, and it's like under those circumstances, he's completely inebriated with that activity. Then check out his activity. Talking to him in a nice air-conditioned living room where he can put on a show. Check when a person's with koso is when he's drunk, kiso the pocket, money. When it comes to money, how does a person behave when it comes to money? People change. When it comes to money, everybody's different, right? We have a different view. We have the rest of the world. You can have the most kind-hearted person who, when it comes to money, a person look at his behavior when it comes to money. And the third one is kaso, his anger, right? How well does he control his anger? When a person's in a very intense situation and his guard is down, he's frustrated, and he's on the boiling point, how does he behave when he's lost his temper? Does he control himself? Does he cut loose completely with no regard, no concern for anybody else around him? Those are ways that the Gemara says, one of these ways we find is a verse in Proverbs that says, you can test the person by what you see coming out of his mouth. What he gets enthusiastic about, how he uses his mouth, that tells you a tremendous amount about the individual. And I told you that on Shidduchim, that when you're looking for wines of what the character of this person is what she speaks about. Remember, she's looking at you the same way. Right? So you have to be careful too. But that tells you a tremendous amount about the individual. The third verse. Do not go about as a talebearer is a command in Leviticus, in Vayikra. This is the cornerstone for the halachas of Lashon Hara, prohibited gossip. The word in Hebrew is rachel, let's say like rachel ba'amecha, a rachel peddler, right? A peddler, a traveling peddler, a merchant who goes around peddling his wares from one place to another. The reason that somebody who's a gossip monger goes around from one place to another, I want to hear what you have to say, then I hear what you have to say and I go tell somebody else. I hear what he has to say and I go peddling my wares all over the place. That's why the Torah refers to it. The fourth verse is, do not torment your fellow man. Now, according to the whole, please hold the question till the end. Do not torment your fellow man is the command, according to our tradition. This is the prohibition of what's called onas devorim. Onas devorim means hurting somebody with words. Anytime you use your mouth and you cause somebody any logical or any other type of pain, then you have transgressed this prohibition of not hurting others. Positive possibilities are when you use the mouth. Some of these are common sense. Some of these maybe you thought of. Some of these you wouldn't. You'll be quite surprised at. First is to compliment people. Right? That means somebody who has purchased something. Let's say somebody shows you a new purchase. Somebody buys a new car. And he shows you a new car that he's bought. And he asks you, what do you think of my car? Right? You feel that you think he's overpaid. Right? You happen to have just read a report in Consumer Guide that this type of car has a history of breaking down right at the worst possible time. And so on and so forth. Right? And he shows you, this is a brand new car I paid, and he's paid about $2,000 more than you know that it's worth. He says, what do you think of it? Now, you're in a situation where he's already, it's a fait accompli. Nothing you say is going to make him bring the car back, and he can't go back and he can't get a refund, and he asks you, what do you think of this automobile that I've bought? The best thing you can do, a mitzvah, is to compliment his purchase. Say, I think it's a wonderful car. What if you truly don't feel that way? Now you've got a conflict. Right? You've got a moral self that it's such a great. You don't think much of the car, you don't think as much of a purchase. The halacha is, even so, he obviously does. He obviously knew what you think of it. Does he want your honest evaluation? Yeah, well, I think, and he criticized the car. Or is he looking for a positive word? Because very often people make purchases about what they'd like. And after the person's gone and invested all their time and energy and money, and then you come up with a negative remark that you could destroy him, then the person feels that, after all, he may be quite done. And you could cause a tremendous amount of pain that way. So any type of compliment, your wife comes home with a brand new dress, a testing ground for all married men. Right? Your wife comes home with a new dress, what do you think? Right? Now, if your wife is asking opinion, by news, so you tell her, you know, I think that, you know, normally your taste is beyond compare, right? And you start with a whole list of compliments and say, but, you know, I think that orange with purple polka dots, I just don't think that's you, right? Something like that, and she returns it. But if she's bought it, and she likes it, and very often that's one of the sacrifices in marriage, is that even if you don't like it, you have to train yourself to like the things that she likes. That's part of the sacrifice. Then, if she's looking for a kind word, then your mitzvah is to give her the kind word, right? And that is a tremendous mitzvah, to compliment somebody, even if you don't believe it yourself. Even you don't. I'll get to the question in a little while. Okay. Number two, encourage people. Right? There's no limit to what could be accomplished. Very often, the lack of an unkind word to one person at a proper time can make a difference between their success and failure. It's going to be especially true when it comes to children. Each person as an individual knows what they would like. One kind word properly placed, this is especially true when you have students, a little bit of it. A person should make a career, turn his life into a career of encouraging others. Right? Somebody's feeling out. The Gemara says that the Prophet Eliyahu, remember we spoke about the Prophet Eliyahu in connection with circumcision. The Prophet Eliyahu was he was in the marketplace of Beit Lepus. Beit Lepus is a place. The Prophet Eliyahu showed up. Remember I told you that the Prophet Eliyahu never died, and he came back for visits periodically. And he saw one of the Amoraim there, a man named Rabbi Broka Chozoa. That was his name. And Eliyahu Hanavi came up, this man, Rabbi Broka Chozoa. He met him in this market. Rabbi Broka Chozoa said to Eliyahu Hanavi, very busy marketplace at the tumult, he said to Eliyahu Hanavi, who in this marketplace is guaranteed immediate entrance into paradise? Anybody in this marketplace that's guaranteed immediate entrance into paradise? So Eliyahu Hanavi looked around, he said, nope, come back tomorrow. Comes back tomorrow and he meets him, and he says to him again, who in this, is there anybody here who's guaranteed immediate entrance into paradise? Eliyahu Hanavi says, yes, those two broke a woman. Obviously they must be doing something tremendously noble, perhaps they're saving lives, tremendous Torah scar, something them out of paradise. Right? So Broca says, we are comedians. Inshi b'diviana. We are comedians. We're jesters. When we see somebody who's got a long face, somebody who's sad, we make sure to go over and cheer him up. And when we see two people that have been fighting with each other, we make sure to make peace among them. right? That's a use of speech that could bring a person to immediate entrance to parenting and cheering people up. Right? Sometimes it's not speech. Sometimes it's the ability to listen when somebody needs to speak. The ability to listen, to let them speak their mind out. Either way, the fact that you are allowing someone to express themselves, or you change a person's mood, that's considered a tremendous act of kindness, a tremendous act of chesed. Advise, the same thing, you have an obligation. If you are capable of advising, somebody asks you for advice, you have an obligation to advise people. The Torah warns, however, make sure you don't give improper advice. And very often you may advise somebody because you'd like to trip him up. It's not good advice. And then he goes and he does something. He ends up being asked, didn't know that, you know, I thought at the time it was good advice. Therefore, when the Torah warns about advising people, the Torah says, be aware that I am Hashem your God. That means that no one else will know whether you were sincere or not, but I, Hashem, know what's going on in your heart. And if, indeed, when you gave the advice, in spite of trying to show how sincere you try to show that you look sincere, if when you gave, you had the person's, you did not have his best intentions in mind, you are going to be accountable for it. I am Hashem, your God. I know what's going on in your mind. And motivation, the same thing, that a few words, woke moments to motivate people can accomplish a tremendous amount. Now, that's as far as the positive goes. Any questions on that so far? Yeah.
Suppose a Jewish person who works as a critic of modern literature. So apparently when he encounters a very weak writing, it is his professional duty to say that it is weak. So he inevitably will hurt the author, may hurt very deeply. So will he thus...
Or a movie critic.
Yes.
Or a movie critic. That's an excellent question. The truth is it's very horrible. Right, we're going to deal with that. which is simply burning in a bigger fire. Right? That's all. What's allowed and what's not allowed. The truth that I'm going to have to look into, because I've never heard that question. That's an interesting question. A professional critic, right? And I could tell my woman's intuition tells me that is probably not a great job. That's not an answer. Let's say somebody does do their job, and we have to find out what the halachic limitations will be. Yeah.
We have somewhere to quote unquote. Hide the truth if asked an opinion, knowing that the person he's asking has remained committed to doing what they're doing.
Correct.
Case in point, buying him a white buys a dress and she doesn't want to give it back.
Correct.
Okay. Now let's say this other individual here who bought the dress, for example, is an observant Jew and knows about this law here. What would be the motive for asking, knowing that you are not going to get a direct response?
That's a good question.
Say I want a really honest, that's a good truth, no matter what.
Let me tell you something. When your wife says to you, tell me the truth no matter what, right?
Uh-oh.
Look out. Right? The last thing you do under those circumstances is tell her the truth, right? You have to be very careful. And the same applies to purchase, right? When you go in to a store and you go to buy a new suit, right? And the suit, the clothing salesman, right, first he takes a jacket, he puts the jacket on you, right, he puts the jacket on you. Now you know he's working on a commission basis, right, and he puts a jacket on you, right, and he, yeah, yeah, always a whisper, a whisper of sincerity, I like it, yeah, yeah, right, and then he matches the tie, right, now first he costs about 75% more, right, and says, yeah, this is the tie that's perfect for you, and how do you feel, and he's, this, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah, and they call him, I like it, right, how do you feel, you feel it, you know why he's there to sell, it is human nature that you're a compliment, we like to believe, that's why when you criticize somebody, it is always essential that when you begin a criticism of anybody, criticism with a compliment. Let's say you need to correct somebody. Nobody likes to be corrected. We all like to feel that we are flawless. Let's say you have to correct somebody, right? Let's say your roommate. Now you have to correct your roommate always leaves his clothes, his socks on the floor or something. He leaves his clothing around, right? So you always have to, you want to criticize, you want to correct your parents, right? Somebody who, your mother's doing something wrong. Always begin a criticism with a compliment. Because it's human nature that I want to believe the compliment. The only way I could believe the compliment, you're obviously, either you're telling the complete truth or you're telling a complete falsehood. If I don't believe the criticism, then I have no right to believe the compliment. But the only way I could believe the compliment is if I'm also willing to accept the criticism. So what you do is you say to somebody, you know what? You say to your look. By the way, a little, if possible, a little less salt in the. Oh, sure, no problem whatsoever. If you just start out with straight, Mom, can you put a little less salt in the salad? Make your own salad. You don't like the way I make salad. The minute you start with, it's human nature. I'm not talking about manipulation. It's human nature, right? It's the only way to get the point across. In a compliment, when we're talking about. Remember, the underlying idea here is not a falsehood. The underlying idea here is that the person who's made the purchase does truly quality purchase. They're asking you your opinion. You say, yes, it is a quality purchase. It's not a lie, because that person obviously believes that that purchase is quality. Right? So we're talking about where it's for, like you mentioned, where it's already, it is not going to make any type of change. Something, if somebody hasn't paid for it yet, and say, look, what do you think of this? I want to know, because if it's not good, I'm not going to buy it. Then you have a right to tell them. You have to remain tactful, but you have a right to tell them that, you know, I think you could do a little bit better. Okay? Yeah?
Very quick question. You mentioned the three ways how we can see what the person is really about is when they're drunk, or the business comes to money, and anger. Would you just a couple of words, can you say about anger?
Sometimes you see people when people get angry, if a person can control himself when he's angry, that tells you something about a person. Some people get angry, then they'll say anything when they're angry. Well, that tells you about the individual. That's really what's going on inside. That his entire life is at the side of you know, I don't have anything to hold back right now. So the minute I want to explode, boom, I explode. Okay, so that's a way of telling you something. Doesn't mean, you know, there's other ways of telling, but the indication of what. Let's go to harm. Because here we're talking about a specific Torah prohibition. So first is any type of insult whatsoever, right? And you should insult, and you run the risk of embarrassing a person, then you're transgressed a very severe Torah prohibition. Any type of insult of people, purchases, things, possessions that people have, any type of insult whatsoever, is considered a prohibition. Belittling. Somebody tells you he works as an accountant. And I say, an accountant? Right? Boy, what a boring job, right? Probably underpaid, too, right? Now, think about, and people talk like that, or somebody comes to tell you something. Let me say, this is very common. Somebody says to you, tells you a piece of news. Then, I knew that already. Everybody knows that. Then you cut them off in the midst of, I heard already, right? What's underlying that? We say, I've heard about it already. I heard it. I know. Right? You don't want him to think that he has information before you have the information, right? Now, what you're doing, all you have to do is circumstance. Be quiet. Let him tell you. Be quiet. There's a story about a Rosh Hashiva was sitting in a room, and a guy comes into the room. He's talking to one of his students. The guy knocks on the door, and he comes into the room, and he says, Rebbe, the guy interrupts him. He's in the middle of talking to one of the other students. The guy knocks on the door. He says, Rebbe, I'm sorry to interrupt. I've got wonderful news. Wonderful thing. Student leaves. 5 minutes later, another student knocks on the door. Says, Rebbe, I'm sorry to interrupt. I have wonderful news. Zalman's engaged. 5 minutes later, a third guy does the same thing. Mazel tov, thank you very much. The guy he's talking to looks at him. He thinks, he's nuts. Look at it. What's going on? He says, did you see the pleasure that individual got by relating the news to me? I was able to give him the pleasure simply by making him feel that he was the first one to let me know the news. What did it cost? All I had to do was say thank you, and it is wonderful. He didn't say any falsehood whatsoever. All he said is, thank you very much, that's wonderful news. Right? Somebody comes to tell you something, you've heard it already. I've heard that already. How do you feel? Every one of us has been there. Every one of us, I'm positive, has been wanted. You're so excited, and you run up to him and you tell him something, he says, I know, where have you been? I know that, right? How do you feel? At that moment, how do you feel? Right? It's such an easy act of kindness to do on a regular basis. To cause worry, right? Certainly, to joke around, causing worry. That blue car with the ticket on it outside, is that yours? Right? And he goes running outside, there's nothing there, right? Or somebody tells, a family member just recently had a heart attack. I've heard this done. A family member had a heart attack, had a mild heart attack. Really? Their child is going to the hospital for stitches, right? Child cut his hand. Going for stitches. I hope he makes it alive out of that. I hope he gets out of that place alive. That place, they're notorious for this, that, and the other thing, right? And then all you're doing is causing needless worry. There's nothing that people are going, nothing people can do about it. Past events, this is very common, unfortunately. Somebody who's a Baal Tshuva, it is prohibited to make any mention of his past behavior. Somebody who has turned over a new leaf in life, it is prohibited. You're sitting around at a table, and a guy, they're passing food around at the table, and there's a Baal Tshuva sitting there at the table, and as they're passing the food around, he looks at the label, because he wants to make sure it's kosher. And he says something like that, "Don't worry, pork man. No, don't worry. He's done the past. Any event that he's done the past, which he's trying to put behind him. Somebody who's converted to Judaism, you're not allowed to talk about what his ancestors have done. Any type of greeting, right? Somebody who's made it back from, "Hi, how was rehab?" Any type of allusion, whether subtle or overt, to past misdeeds, all of that falls in the category of an honest warrant. Here, gentlemen, I can tell you people are losing their portion in the world to come on a regular basis, right, through the use of nicknames. It is strictly prohibited, according to halacha, somebody, if it is a nickname which he's proud of, right, then you're allowed to call him by that nickname. If it's a nickname which either he can't stand, right, then absolutely prohibited. Every time you call him a nickname, he turns red. Or if it's a nickname which he's gotten so used, it doesn't even bother him anymore, or at least he doesn't show signs of it bothering him. It could be he cringes every time he hears it. But your intent when using the nickname is a belittling or a derogatory intent, then you are transgressing by using that nickname. So if it's a short name of his last name, you know, if it's Goldberg, say Goldie or something, right? Derogatory, it was in Lord of the Flies, Piggy, right? No one, by any stretch of the imagination, even if his last name is Pigsting, he does not want to be called Piggy, right? No one under any circumstances would consider Piggy to be everybody would consider Piggy to be a derogatory nickname. Absolutely prohibited.
Please turn the tape to the other side.